Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, October 23rd, 2025. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined, Halloween, Decatur, Isabella's Curse Consumes Minds, Haunted House, Story Beacon, Those Brave Enough to Enter. By Danette Beckett, Decatur. Isabella Bourdeau has a story to tell. Anyone interested in hearing her good, bad, and really ugly tale is invited to Isabella's Curse, a local haunted house at 2121 South Imboden Court, in Decatur. With his thick British accent, head butler Mr. Graves is ready to begin the journey. Lady Isabella, she's a special girl, he said. Something dark looms over the house. It's in everyone's minds. It's overbearing. I think it wants Isabella. The story and all its visual effects of Isabella's curse were from the creative minds of owner Matthew Wright and a few friends. The crew refers to the displays as a walk-through theater production. I love having entertainment around here, Wright said. The more entertainment we have around here, the more the kids are coming here, not causing mischief. Isabella's Curse is open on Fridays and Saturdays through November 1st. The cost of admission is $18. Those wanting to skip the line can purchase a fast pass for $30. All of the funds go back into the house. We put it back to make it more immersive, making the experience better year after year, Wright said. This is the third year for the haunted house. The Isabella's Curse crew brainstorm changes and updates to the scenes throughout the year. Wright has experience in the business, including as an assistant in The Scream Haunted House, a former fundraiser for the now-defunct Decatur Celebration. A lot of people want a more immersive style, like when you're fully immersed into the environment you're in, he said. Walking through the entire house can take approximately 15 minutes, the crew said. Some people will run through the darn thing, Wright said. Some people really look at the details. Each scene has unique details. The cobwebs are strewn throughout most of the rooms. Faux blood splatters can be found in various corners, as well as on the floor and on the walls. And body parts are handmade, including a wall of skulls. Tons of art techniques go into it, Wright said. A haunted house is definitely a crafty industry. Safety techniques are taught to the actors, along with ways to successfully scare people. The designers and actors are certified in funhouse safety, they said. The visitors at Isabella's Curse range in ages. There's not really one particular demographic, Wright said. You get them all the way down to 13 or 14 years old. And I've seen them all the way to grandparents coming through, Wright said. The reactions are more predictable, Wright said. I find the older generation looks more at the detail and the artistry of it, he said, where the younger ones, they're more scared and try to almost run their way through it. The tour is self-guided. However, actors entice the visitors along the route. If you're stuck, the actors have ways to help cater people through, Wright said. In a haunted house, you want to scare them forward, not backwards. Approximately 25 actors are involved in bringing Isabella's curse to life. A lot of labor of love goes into it, Wright said. Isabella's story continues to evolve through the years. Therefore, the rooms and the simulated gardens change each year. If there's not a plot, it just wanders, actor Christy Hopper said about the trek. Even the actors have their own backgrounds, and they're put in the plot line. Each area also adds to the story. Since spooky swamps can be common in Louisiana, the creators gave Isabella's family an old Southern family name, Bourdeau. That became Isabella's family history, Hopper said. Four generations or so have experienced the curse. At the end of the season, the scenes will remain, allowing the designers the opportunity to update and make changes as the ideas and resources become available. The more detail you put in, the more it shows, Wright said. If you go, what? Isabella's curse. When? 7 to 11 p.m. Fridays and Saturdays, October 24th, 25th, 31st, and November 1st. Where? 2121 South Imboden Court, Decatur. Tickets, $18 admission, $30 skip the lines with a fast pass. On the web, isabellascurse.com, and that's Isabella with a Z, not an S. Shutdown ravages food banks. Representative Brzezinski hears concerns as pantries' donations run out. By Valerie Wells, Decatur. One effect of the federal government shutdown has been that food pantries are struggling. During a visit to the Decatur Family YMCA on Tuesday, U.S. Representative Nikki Brzezinski met with a group of members who talked about their own experiences and worries in regard to the shutdown. One of them was Margaret Walker of Main Street Church of the Living God, who said the church's ministries are having a hard time keeping up. With donations down, the church can't afford to continue all its ministries. We don't have food for the food bank, Walker said, and she's seen that in other church food pantries as well. Not only are more people asking for help from the food bank, fewer donations are coming in. Walker said, because so many people are barely feeding their own families, and the church is facing the possibility of having to reduce their assistance to only their own congregation, instead of helping the community, too. The church's foster grandparent program, which receives federal funding, is also in jeopardy, she said. The government shutdown began October 1st after Congress failed to approve a short-term measure to fund the government generally at current levels through November 21st. Republicans supported the extension, but Democrats blocked it, insisting the measure address their concerns on health care. Democrats want to reverse the Medicaid cuts in President Donald Trump's mega bill passed this summer and extend tax credits that make health insurance premiums more affordable for millions of people who purchase through the marketplace established by the Affordable Care Act. Republicans insist negotiations on health care occur after the government is fully reopened. We need Republicans and Democrats at the table, Brzezinski said. What we're simply asking for on day 21 of this shutdown is for Republicans to acknowledge the manufactured health care crisis that they've created. I was talking about this today with Decatur residents, about how people are getting their premium notices. A woman here today in Decatur said her increase is 4 times what she's paying today. We need Republicans to hear this anxiety, this fear that they, quite frankly, have created through these cuts to Medicaid and their refusal to extend the Affordable Health Care Act tax credits. That's a key component, and it's a reasonable request to get Republicans to come to the table. Another major concern is that on November 1st, indications are that SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, benefits will be discontinued, the Springfield Democrat said. People rely on SNAP to feed their families. We cannot allow children and seniors to go hungry, she said. So I'm very much in support of ending the shutdown. We need Republicans to get to the table. Her hope, she said, is that things don't get to that point and that the two sides will work together to reopen the government before that November 1st deadline. The one piece that we have asked for is that Republicans recognize this healthcare crisis that they have created, and we want them to work to fix it, she said. Specifically, I think they could extend the ACA premium tax credits, which just provides a little bit of relief to working families so they can afford premiums on the ACA marketplace. Republicans also have the option of rolling back the almost $1 trillion cuts they've made to Medicaid. In her travels around her district, she said, she's also hearing significant anxiety from seniors who depend on SNAP because their fixed incomes are inadequate. These are folks who are 80 years old, she said. These are not folks who are able-bodied, who just don't want to go to work. These are folks who have worked their whole lives. and they deserve a retirement with dignity, which means they should be able to feed themselves. Some federal programs continue even under a shutdown. Jody Hall, director of financial aid at Richland Community College, said student financial aid is largely unaffected. All federal financial aid programs will continue to operate as normal, which means students will continue to receive aid on time, Hall said. Additionally, the FAFSA, Free Application for Federal Student Aid, remains open, allowing students to submit the application and move through the financial aid process in a timely manner. YMCA CEO Dominic Santamassimo said he invited Buzinski to speak to members at the Y so they could give her their personal perspective. Talking to some of our people in our national office, I think we're going to be okay for the next couple of months, he said. After that, some of our food reimbursements we get for our children that are on free and reduced lunch, that could go away. We already have people who have suspended their memberships or terminated their memberships because budgets are not allowing them right now because of their health care rates going up. Our hearts are with everybody who is working without a salary right now. Education. Big Tech drops millions to train teachers on AI by Jocelyn Gecker, Associated Press, San Antonio. On a scorching hot Saturday in San Antonio, dozens of teachers traded a day off for a glimpse of the future. The topic of the day's workshop, enhancing instruction with artificial intelligence. After marveling as AI graded classwork instantly and turned lesson plans into podcasts or online storybooks, one high school English teacher raised a concern that was on the minds of many. Are we going to be replaced with AI? That remains to be seen. But for the nation's 4 million teachers to stay relevant and help students use the technology wisely, teachers' unions have forged an unlikely partnership with the world's largest technology companies. The two groups don't always see eye to eye, but say they share a common goal, training the future workforce of America. Microsoft, OpenAI, and Anthropic are providing millions of dollars for AI training to the American Federation of Teachers, the country's second largest teachers union. In exchange, the tech companies have an opportunity to make inroads into schools and win over students in the race for AI dominance. AFT President Randy Weingarten said skepticism guided her negotiations, but the tech industry has something schools lack: deep pockets. There's no one else who's helping us with this. That's why we felt we needed to work with the largest corporations in the world, Weingarten said. We went to them. They didn't come to us. Weingarten first met with Microsoft President and Vice Chairman Brad Smith in 2023 to discuss a partnership. She later reached out to OpenAI to pursue an agnostic approach. That means any company's AI tools could be used in a training session. Under the arrangement announced in July, Microsoft is contributing $12.5 million to AFT over 5 years. OpenAI is providing $8 million in funding and $2 million in technical resources, and Anthropic has offered $500,000. With the money, AFT is planning to build an AI training hub in New York City that will offer virtual and in-person workshops for teachers. The goal is to open at least two more hubs and train 400,000 teachers over the next 5 years. The National Education Association, the country's largest teachers union, announced its own partnership with Microsoft last month. The company has provided a $325,000 grant to help the NEA develop AI trainings in the form of micro-credentials. Online trainings open to the union's 3 million members, said Daya Bilal, NEA's Senior Director of Education Policy. The goal is to train at least 10,000 members this school year. Both unions set similar terms. Educators, not the private funders, would design and lead training sessions that include AI tools from multiple companies. The unions own the intellectual property for the trainings, which cover safety and privacy concerns alongside AI skills. The Trump administration has encouraged the private investment, recently creating an AI education task force as part of an effort to achieve global dominance in artificial intelligence. The federal government urged tech companies and other organizations to foot the bill. So far, more than 100 companies have signed up. Tech companies see opportunities in education beyond training teachers. Microsoft unveiled a $4 billion initiative for AI training, research, and the gifting of its AI tools to teachers and students. It includes the AFT grant and a program that will give all school districts and community colleges in Washington, Microsoft's home state, free access to Microsoft Copilot tools. Google says it will commit $1 billion for AI education and job training programs, including free access to its Gemini for Education platform for U.S. high schools. Several recent studies have found that AI use in schools is rapidly increasing, but training and guidance are lacking. The industry offers resources that can help scale AI literacy efforts quickly. But educators should ensure any partnership focuses on what's best for teachers and students, said Robin Lake, director of the Center on Reinventing Public Education. At the San Antonio AFT training, about 50 educators turned up for the three-hour workshop for teachers in the Northside Independent School District. It's the city's largest, employing about 7,000 teachers. The day started with a pep talk. We all know when we talk about AI, teachers say, nah, I'm not doing that. Trainer Kathleen Torregrossa told The Room. But we are preparing kids for the future. That is our primary job. And AI, like it or not, is part of our world. Attendees generated lesson plans using ChatGPT, Google's Gemini, Microsoft Copilot, and two AI tools designed for schools, Conmingo and Colorin, Colorado. Gabriel Aguirre, a first grade dual language teacher, repeatedly used the word amazing to describe what she saw. It can save you so much time, she said, and add visual flair to lessons. She walked away with a plan to use AI tools to make illustrated flashcards in English and Spanish to teach vocabulary. With all the video games, the cell phones you have to compete against, the kids are always saying, I'm bored. Everything is boring, Aguirre said. If you can find ways to engage them with new technology, you've just got to do that. Boy on Long Road Healing from Crash by Danette Beckett, Mount Zion. The six-year-old Mount Zion boy, injured in a two-vehicle crash, has returned home. But the recovery is far from over. He is still in back neck brace and legs casted and in braces, read an update on a GoFundMe page to assist the family of Noah Force. He has a very long road to recovery ahead of him. According to Mount Zion Police Chief Adam Skundberg, the crash occurred shortly after 7:30 p.m. on October 15th along Harryland Road. Skundberg said Noah was a passenger in an eastbound Toyota Camry driven by his father, when it drifted into the westbound lane and collided head-on with the Toyota SUV driven by a 16-year-old female. Both occupants of the Camry were taken to the hospital for treatment. There were no other injuries in the other car, the chief said. According to information posted on the GoFundMe page, Noah was taken to a Springfield hospital for treatment of multiple broken bones, a skull fracture, and injuries to his spine. He has been released from the hospital and is recuperating at home. The fundraising request was created by Samantha Byers, the family's school bus driver. He is doing as well as can be expected for a six-year-old, said Byers, who has remained in contact with the family. He's in good spirits, and as long as his medicines are kept on a schedule, pain is kept minimal. The healing process now will include staying as comfortable as possible while navigating doctor's visits. Another concern is to help the family financially, Byers said. Our community has been great with reaching out to me and offering gas cards, grocery cards, or just asking how they can help, she added. Heartland Bank, CNB, to merge, by Ben Sinkson, Jacksonville Journal-Courier, Bloomington. Two major Central Illinois financial institutions have signed a definitive agreement to merge in a common stock and cash deal valued at more than $170 million. HBT Financial, the holding company for Heartland Bank and Trust Company, and CNB Bank Shares, the holding company for CNB Bank and Trust, said Monday that CNB Bank will merge into Heartland Bank and Trust. The combined company will have about $6.9 billion in total assets, $4.7 billion in total loans, and about $5.9 billion in total deposits, according to a news release. It will have 84 branch locations across Illinois, eastern Iowa, and Missouri. The boards of both companies unanimously approved the decision. The merger is expected to be completed in the first quarter of 2026. The per-share price of CNB Bank stock jumped almost 15% in trading upon the announcement. CNB Bank and Trust is based in Carlinville and has branches across West Central Illinois, including in Jacksonville, Taylorville, Chapin, Pittsfield, Jerseyville, Carrollton, and Verdun. Heartland Bank and Trust is headquartered in Bloomington and has branches throughout central Illinois and eastern Iowa. Among the central Illinois locations are Springfield, Decatur, Lincoln, Clinton, Farmer City, Gibson City, Champaign, Peoria, El Paso, Eureka, Metamora, Lexington, and Chenoa, among others. This partnership marks an important milestone in our ongoing commitment to deliver exceptional service and value to our customers, employees, and communities, CNB Bank Shares President and CEO James T. Ashworth stated in the news release. CNBN has always believed in the enduring strength of community banking, and joining HBT positions us to continue that mission with expanded capabilities and a broader foundation for future growth. Both banks have strong local roots in central Illinois, have successfully expanded to larger growth markets, have excellent deposit bases, and solid commercial loan growth, stated J. Lance Carter, president and CEO of HBT Financial and Heartland Bank. Nonprofit to Drive Legal Justice Van by Will Bauer, Belleville News Democrat, East St. Louis. Land of Lincoln Legal Aid, a provider of free civil legal assistance to lower-income Illinoisans, launched two mobile offices on wheels Monday in hopes to expand its services. The organization serves 65 counties in central and southern Illinois, including offices in Springfield, Champaign, Decatur, and Charleston. Among the central Illinois counties served are Christian, Logan, Sangamon, Shelby, Champaign, Coles, Cumberland, DeWitt, Douglas, Edgar, Effingham, Ford, Macon, Moultrie, and Piatt. The nonprofit's new mobile justice vans will break down barriers of geography, income, and transportation that too often prevent some from seeking legal help, Executive Director Clarissa Gaff said. We want to be where they can access it, Gaff said. If they don't have a car, if they don't have access to the internet, if their cell phone is being spotty in a particular county, we want to be able to reach them no matter what. Land of Lincoln provides legal services in areas like eviction prevention, family law, domestic safety, access to health care and education, public benefits, income security, and criminal record clearing. Typically, residents needing help have either showed up to one of the brick-and-mortar locations or called in, Gaff said. The problem is that Land of Lincoln only has 9 offices across an area roughly the size of Indiana. We've always really expected people to come to us or access us through the hotline, Gaff said. I think for us to put an office on wheels, kind of like a bookmobile or health clinic, going from community to community, it means we're more deeply invested in our communities and far more accessible to all of our 65 counties. The idea came from other legal aid organizations, which have vans, but generally use them for disaster relief, Gaff said. About 700,000 Illinoisans would qualify for their services in the 65-county area based on income. It's estimated 80 to 90% of those residents could use legal assistance. However, only 12 to 14,000 residents use Land of Lincoln services annually. In addition to reaching new territory, Gaff said she hopes the vans can also act as billboards. The tour with the new van started on Tuesday at the courthouses in Randolph and Perry counties to the southeast of the Metro East. Appointments are not required. After the tour, Land of Lincoln will focus the new vans on parts of the state where they don't have physical offices. We plan to hit hard many of our counties that we're not regularly serving, Gaff said. Man gets prison for second-degree murder by Tony Reed, Decatur. Timothy D. Chapman, the Decatur man who pulled a knife during a fist fight over a woman's sense of honor, has been sent to prison for 6 years. Chapman, 29, had been due to face a jury trial Monday in Macon County Circuit Court, but took a plea deal at the last minute. He then admitted a charge of second-degree murder in the January 30th stabbing death of 26-year-old Jamarcus T. Golden. A sworn affidavit about the case, filed by the Decatur Police Department, said trouble had flared just before 4 a.m. during a party at a house in the 1200 block of North Church Street. Golden's fiance had discovered that Chapman was chatting on the FaceTime app with a woman who used to date her husband-to-be. She found it disrespectful to her that Timothy would be on FaceTime with her fiance's ex-girlfriend, said Officer Christopher Scallon, who signed the affidavit. He described the 31-year-old woman approaching Golden to voice her complaint, and that prompted her fiancé to stride up to Chapman to confront him. A 33-year-old male witness told police what happened next. Timothy stated something similar to, "You want to fight? Let's go," Scallon said, and a shouting match between the two men soon led to them trading blows as tempers flared. The witness stated he then observed Timothy jab Jamarcus in the chest area, which he initially believed were punches, but quickly determined was a stabbing, as Timothy had a knife with a black handle in his hand. Golden then clutched his chest as blood welled up, and he was heard to cry out, "You just stabbed me," before staggering to a bathroom where he collapsed. He was later declared dead at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Sentencing Chapman, presiding judge Thomas Griffith also made a recommendation that he receive drug abuse treatment while incarcerated. We'll take a break now and return with the second half of the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, October 23rd, 2025. Please stay tuned.